Mike Dempsey. Look, I hear from people all the time who are having tax problems, but don't be afraid of the IRS. Right now, you can talk or meet with local professionals that are here to help your specific tax issues. Accelerate your tax solution with Accelerated Tax Solutions.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Breathe deep the gathering gloom.
Yeah!
If you're a Tampa Bay fan, that's the way you're feeling.
You were robbed. Too many men on the ice.
Where the hell are the refs? Two linesmen, two referees. Four on the ice. All you gotta do is keep your eyes on what? 10 skaters, a couple of goaltenders, and guys are hopping off the boards, coming in through the open door. It's a subjective call. It's a judgmental call. And you're not allowed to review it. Unbelievable. Once again, common sense comes into play in the biggest of the big events. That in Game 4 last night. Of the Stanley Cup Finals, Tampa Bay trying to win three in a row. They had won eight straight in their own barn, you know, including knocking off Colorado in Game 3. It was the first time the Avalanche had lost in a month. They were 12-2 in the playoffs. Now, after winning and losing, I guess they did it in the opposite way that I said in Tampa, they're now 13-3 this year in the playoffs. I mean, that is just absolutely spectacular. But once again, here we go. Umpires, officials, referees. In this case, you can really go either way with it. I'd like to compare it to taking the extra step in the NBA. If you just watch the NBA playoffs, including the NBA finals, it's really almost nauseating now how a third step is completely allowed. And no referee's going to call it. No one's going to put their name out there as the guy who calls an obvious traveling. And, you know, it hurt Tampa Bay last night. Their coach, John Cooper, couldn't even speak post-game. He bounced back a little bit earlier today. There's nothing you can do about it. The advisory board met with the four officials at the end of the game, and neither one of the four saw that it was too many men on the ice. You can make the case that there were seven, that there were two guys whose blades were not off the ice when Kadri, and congratulations to him, I mean, he's been dealing with a bad wrist. He comes back for the first time in 18 games and, you know, just solves Andre Vasilevsky, who was tremendous last night. 35 stops, some of them just phenomenal. And you look at the first two games in this series, you know, he allowed 11 goals. All of a sudden now Tampa split the next two. He's only allowed 5 goals. I mean, feel free to do something with your power play, Tampa. You won a 14 so far in the NHL Finals. All right, I'm going to turn the page. I understand that there are hockey fans out there, but I gotta find my demographic. I've got to bring up and get what it is that that you are interested in. How about hot? All right, I'll never complain about the heat. I love it. That's why I came here years and years and years ago. I'll complain about the cold. All right, if there's a couple of months that I play zero golf at all, and let's be honest, I almost never play during football season, but just hear me out here for the conversation. I would say probably, you know, December, January, when it gets really cold here in Jacksonville. Today I played 18, and it was just insane. There was no breeze, okay? I mean, none. And, you know, still had a really good time. Went out there and enjoyed myself. But, you know, as I do after every shot, you know, I'm on my phone. I'm looking around. What am I going to talk about tonight? You know, it's only 11:30 right now. Now it's noon. Now it's 12:30. I don't go on till 6. Things change, as you know, every single minute. And you know, I'm snapping photos or snapping things that I see as I read this particular article, or I see that this comes down. It's just all part of my 24-hour preparation for this show. But then it came to me. I was like, I mean, this is nuts. I mean, what is the hottest game? Being out there at training camp is, I happen to love it. You know why, Dylan?
Why is that?
It allows me to keep my sexy.
Because okay.
I sweat out all of the Miller Lights the night before. So, you know, if I'm carrying, let's say I'm carrying around an extra 75 pounds.
Okay.
I'll sweat like 4 or 5 of them out right there on the practice
floor. No Twinkies?
No.
No Twinkies?
No. Stuff. Just Gatorades, you know, Powerades, some water is provided there for the media. All that's good. But it gets really hot, and there's not a lot of shade. And, of course, this year the practices will be out at Episcopal. They did announce today, formally, no surprise here, that Jacksonville will fully begin training camp on July 24th. I did see that the Raiders are bringing in their rookies on the 19th, and they're bringing in the veterans on the 20th. I looked around, read some articles. I'm wondering why a later start for Jacksonville. I know they were penalized a year ago. It was, I guess we can make the case, the only time all season that Urban Meyer did really any coaching whatsoever, when reportedly he, you know, told players to go after it in too physical of a manner, where the NFL found out about it and said that, you know, the contact was too much. And I don't remember the exact penalty that came along with that, but maybe it's just Jacksonville's choice here. I mean, both have changed coaches, so it can't be that, and I don't believe there's any penalty from a year ago. But again, I'm looking around. If you know, that's why I ask. I mean, I told you, I spent all day prepping, but I do ask. Best way to get me is on the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosure. That number is 641-1010. Anyway, you know, I just talked to Frank Lauren and Hayes about this. The first time I ever came to Jacksonville was the hottest college game I've ever been to in my life, and that was right here when Southern Miss with Brett Favre beat Florida State. Florida State was a heavy favorite, and they just totally fell apart in that particular game. And it was, I mean, guys were literally passing out the old Gator Bowl here, and it was my first ever chance to see Jacksonville. And you know, the next day at the landing, which was, you know, really running and ripping then, the landing was like the place to be. And I remember just being so hungover on a Sunday, and we're at the landing, and like Marshall Tucker's out there playing a free concert. And it was just, ended up being a weekend that you thought was going to be one for the ages, and it ended up being terrible. But that was such a hot day. The other one for me, as I said, was, no, let's make it about 10 years later, 1998, when I was here and I was working at the Ball, and I would be on the Coughlin flights. And that is, as I said, they open up against the Chicago Bears. And I never dreamed, because I lived in Chicago for 7 years, okay? I never dreamed that I would go back to that location to say that is, in my mind, the hottest NFL game I had ever been to. And I was in the press box for that game. I mean, obviously, the game here between Southern Miss and Florida State, when I was, a sophomore in college, I was in the 80th row of the Gator Bowl. And, you know, that was outside. And I even want to say that was like before bottled water. Do we know the exact years? I know when I was in college, I never had a bottled water my entire time in high school in Boston or in Tallahassee. It was one of two things. You drink flat out of the hose, or you drink right out of the faucet. Now, they used to sell like those big, you know, gallons of water right there next to the milk, but never little bottles of water. Can you find that out for me, Dylan?
I'm trying to find that out now.
When actually that came into play. We were talking about the other night. It's like the new term, Karen. You know, if you're a woman out there, and usually a Karen, let's be kind here, she's overfed, and she thinks that she's really important, And she usually goes after a group and is pointing a finger and feels that she's so much more important than everyone. But when did Karen really come into play as far as the age? I'll tell you another one. I was born on Cinco de Mayo. I didn't hear about Cinco de Mayo until I was in Chicago. Okay? And, you know, 30 years of age. I never heard about it growing up in Boston. I never heard about it when I was here the first time or I was in Tallahassee. So certain phrases, certain words come up at a time in our life, but also product as well. If you found the first bottled water.
It says it was invented back in the 1700s, so obviously it wasn't that. But
Denmark, baby. That's why you get the big bucks.
Yeah, exactly.
1700. All right, so my bad. I'm lying.
So I mean, what did you, if you went to a game and you were in college and you needed a drink.
You drank out of a water fountain.
Okay. So if you wanted a Coke, you get the glass bottle still?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did they still sell the glass Gatorade bottles?
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Yeah, but I mean, I'm just trying to get an idea. I mean, you go to a convenience store now, there's bottled water all over the place. And it's been that way for at least, 25 years or so. But it wasn't the case here in the late 80s. I know it wasn't. And it wasn't while I was going to school. Anyway, if someone knows the answer to that, go ahead and let us know. So, hottest game ever. Those are the two for me. What about you? 641-1010 on the text line, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. You have one?
I got a few.
You're so young and thin, though, man. Nothing seems to bother you. Do you even break a sweat out there?
A little bit. I remember one game, Tebow's first game, when he came here. I remember being hot, but I don't remember it being, like, scorching hot, even though it was. I mean, I was 13.
In late October? Really?
No.
Was it Florida, Georgia?
No. Tebow's first game as a Bronco.
Oh, okay.
I remember the stadium ran out of ice.
All right.
And people were passing out left and right. And then it stormed. There was a delay, like third quarter. It was in the second half of the game. That was really hot. And then I went to a July race in Daytona. Got rained out Saturday. We came back Sunday. And it started the race at noon. And then the second half of the race got rained out.
I was there. I went to all of those, particularly the Daytona 500, but certainly the summer race.
That's why they moved it to August, because it was scorching hot.
It felt like, because those Chicago years, I come back for the Daytona 500, it seemed like it would rain every year here in Daytona for the 500. Nonetheless, we'll begin with that today. We got a lot of serious issues we want to get into as well. Over the next couple of hours, I do want to bring in Gary Smits here in a couple of minutes because, I'm really concerned about golf. And I almost feel like this is like the last time to really dive into it and have a conversation because we have everything that's happening now. We have the second LIV Tour event coming up next week in Portland. Then that's followed up by the British Open. And after that, for me, it has always been, kind of see ya to the sport of golf. See you to the PGA Tour, whether it's a President's Cup, whether it's the Ryder's Cup, whether it's a battle to, earn your way through and end up with the most possible points, FedEx Cup standing points. I could sit here and tell you who won the last five U.S. Opens, who won the last five British Opens. Don't ask me who won the FedEx Cup standings of a year or two or three years. It doesn't matter to me. It just doesn't. I mean, we're into football by then. We got college ball, we got pro ball, and we got the pennant races in Major League Baseball. So I love golf, but it is absolutely seasonal for me, and I feel like right now tonight is a good chance to get the very latest in on what Jay Monahan, and let's be honest here, what Jay Monahan did not say earlier in the week as the commissioner of the PGA Tour. Totally out of his league. I mean, it really, if you look at Roger Goodell, who's been on stage, and Jay Monahan, it really makes you wonder, what the hell are these commissioners doing? Seriously. I mean, it came out today, that Roger Goodell doesn't have the power to dismiss Daniel Snyder. We get that. A large part of being a commissioner is being a puppet to your owners. So Roger Goodell has to address and listen to all 32 owners. But it also came out yesterday, and it was Mark Maskey with the report. I'm trying to think if he's Washington Times or Washington Post. One of the two, I do apologize. But he's right there in the District of Columbia. He's a very good reporter. He came out yesterday and said that Roger Goodell is not the guy who is deciding the punishment for Deshaun Watson. It's not him. What does he make? $46 million a year? $54 million? What in the hell does he do? Honestly. And I'm not a Roger Goodell hater. I'm not at all. I'm not even close to it. I actually happen to think he's a pretty good guy. But what do you do if you're not involved in these type of situations? It's amazing to me. Jay Monahan as well, really talking out of both sides of his mouth. To me, it kind of feels like desperation to come forward with what he did with the, you know, the monies that are now going to be available. And then especially the no cut after ripping the LIV tour. And one of the major reasons why once you get away from the political side of it. Okay, I'm going to have a conversation here with Gary Smits, and I don't want it to be about blood money and about politics. We've been through that. Let's get to the golf now. And the biggest criticism to the LIV Tour is basically threefold, all right? Number one, you only play 54 holes. How can Greg Norman, the CEO, make a pledge and lobby to the World Golf Ranking Board that their point should count if you don't play four rounds at 72 holes? You're playing 54 holes. That's number one. Number two, no one gets cut. I mean, where's the drive? If you can finish, you can shoot an 82 and still pocket, what, 250 grand or whatever the fee is. So where's the drive there? The third one won't mean as much to you, but it means a lot to folks who cover golf, and that is shotgun starts. You know, if you have shotgun starts, what does that mean? Instead of having a group go off number one and number 10, let's say it's 7:15 in the morning, you've got every tee box filled. So what, Baloo? Who cares? Well, they care. Let's say it's day one and you got four golfers who are six under par in leading next week, next Thursday, where the LIV Tour Part 2 gets underway in Portland, Oregon. And you got a guy finishing up on three. You got a guy in first place. You got a guy finishing up on seven in first place. You got a guy finishing up on 13 in first place. And you got a guy finishing up on 16 in first place. No one else is coming through. Everyone's finishing at the same time. Do you think these golfers are going to all retreat to the media center? Or, well, listen, we got to interview this guy first, this guy first. And it's not like it's a locker room like we get in the NFL or we get in any team sport where just send in the media and they can, it doesn't work that way. They can open up the clubhouse and all of a sudden just say, the media's here, you got to talk to them all. You know how these golfers are treated. They get podium service. They may do a little hit on TV, a little hit on the Golf Channel, you know, a little bit on PGA Tour radio, but they're not out there and available for local, you know, wherever the event is out in Portland. They got radio stations, TV stations. You know, when they come through here at the Players, they've always been good to us. We've always had an opportunity to hear from the very best golfers in the world on both of our stations. That is going to be a grind. And you know what it's going to do? It's going to hurt to cover the sport. Because I don't care how talented you are as a member of the media, you can't be four spots at one time. So I think that's an issue that's kind of lost in all of this. Now, listen, the LIV Tour could fix two to three by saying, we're going from 54 to 72 holes, and forget about the shotgun. We're going to do it the traditional way. You go off one, you go off 10. That's what you do on Thursday, vice versa, coming up on Friday. But anyway, let's get into it with Smits. he's on the other side. And then we got a lot of good stuff to get into tonight, some football-related issues that involve the Jaguars, one that involves college football. We're going to be with you until 8 o'clock. Best way to get a hold of us is on the text line. That is 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. All right, opening comments brought to you by Schmunez Vision. Why Schmunez Vision? Well, they're the best, simply. Okay, we're talking about a high-quality personal and family organization. They focus on everything you can imagine with your eyes, including medical and surgical. All right. For instance, I talk all the time about, you know, you're ready to pass out. You're in bed. You starting to doze off. Maybe you're starting to snore a little bit. Then you're like, oh, man, I got to get up and take out my contacts. You know how bad it is to sleep in your contacts? You know how many folks are told, hey, you know, just sleep. My doc gave me this, and I'm allowed to sleep in contacts for a week, or I'm allowed to sleep in contacts for a couple of days. I don't believe it. No, not at all. I do the disposable each and every day. You got to change your contacts, brother. It's like changing your underwear. You have to change them. And if not, diseases can occur. So I wish I was a candidate for laser eye surgery. I'm not. You may be. And that could be the change that you need for really everything, whether it's looking at the TV, then grabbing your phone. You got to put the readers on. Your eyes get more tired later at night. There's so many things that you can do to make yourself and your eyes that much better. And it all begins with visiting the good folks at Schmunez Vision. Their number, 299-2906. Go to schmunezvision.com. Care you can see. All right, lots to do on this Thursday. It's great to have you with us with Dylan Denmark. My name is Rick Ballew.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, they went real low today in Connecticut. Rory McIlroy, a 62. JT Poston, a 62. Xander Schauffele, Martin Laird, 63s. CH Hockey Sticks, 64. That's Charles Howell III, for those of you who do not know. Webb Simpson, of course, is a caddy. Paul Tesori. Lives out here in North Florida. Patrick Cantlay, 64. So different than we saw, obviously, 1 week ago at the United States Open. Rory McIlroy won 2 weeks ago. I believe he picked up 46 points toward the World Golf Rankings. Of course, Greg Norman now with the LIV Tour wants points for winners, including Charles Schwartzel, who won a couple weeks back. And with the next tournament coming up, it'll be out in Oregon. That'll begin 1 week from today. Let's talk some golf. Let's bring in our good friend Gary Smits, who obviously does cover golf for the Florida Times Union, and he goes into the night with Rick Ballew. Hello, Smitter.
Hey, Ricky, how you doing?
I'm doing really good. I got so much I want to ask you. First things first, let's go back to the greatest of it all. You got to talk about the 156-foot out of the bunker. I think it was a 9-iron by Matt Fitzpatrick with that amount of pressure, and then to be able to 2-putt to win it was just phenomenal. And that's what golf's all about, great theater on the grandest of stages, and he made the shot to win it on Sunday.
Yeah, especially when you consider that the day before, John Rahm essentially put himself out of contention with a double bogey from that bunker, from that same bunker. And on another day, John maybe executes that shot. You know, Patrick doesn't. It's a funny game. But those are the kind of moments that you're not quite sure whether LIV Golf will deliver. The kind of moments on that kind of course, there's right now there's nothing to distinguish LIV Golf from an off-season hit and giggle exhibition. And, you know, the actual PGA Tour golf. And I thought Scottie Scheffler said it very well this week when he said, when I grew up winning at Augusta National. I grew up dreaming about playing at the Byron Nelson and the Colonial in Fort Worth. He said, I didn't grow up dreaming about playing at the Centurion Golf Club for 54 holes,
yeah,
which is where they had the first LIV Golf And look, nobody's saying that it's impossible for this to happen, I suppose, because everything had a beginning at one point. But it's good. It would have to be a generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that this is going to – I think the PGA Tour and the other governing bodies, the USGA, the PGA of America, Augusta National, the Royal and Ancient, I think that worldwide golf is a little bit too entrenched in this history and this legacy,
right,
for an upstart tour to come in there and have much traction.
Maybe not the greatest analogy ever, but you and I were in Tallahassee, you know, 90-91, before Florida State joined the ACC in 92, and forever they wanted to join, and they were never allowed in. But it almost feels like the same deal here, where once it was known that Florida State was going to the ACC, the SEC was finally like, okay, come on board with us. I'm talking about the response this week made by Jay Monahan. What is it, $54 million more now, top 50 in the world golf rankings will play and won't get cut, which is amazing because that's right off the LIV Tour. But why didn't they see this coming, Gary? Why did they wait until after?
You know, it's a valid question. And I suppose that they thought they were too big to fail. Or not necessarily too big to fail, or too big to have any kind of competition. And I suppose maybe one of these days, if we ever got Jay Monahan in a private moment, he probably would say that it's not that he underestimated them. It's just he didn't think it would get to this point this quickly, where you'd have a bunch of past major champions, and I would add, some past player champions. You think about the guys who won the player championship who are playing LIV golf right now, and Sergio Garcia, okay, and just tossing that out there. Martin Keimer,
right,
is another one. And, I'm actually surprised that Matt Kuchar hasn't pulled the trigger on that. He's a guy that I thought would go in there.
Yeah.
So,
and you don't have to pay the caddies.
Yeah. Well, he has to pay the caddy a little bit more, or else he's going to carry his own bag on that. But, I don't think he's going to admit it. But I do think that they've been telling these guys there's a culture of being an independent contractor on the PGA Tour.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a loyalty to a team. There isn't a loyalty to a conference like in college football. You know, they've been told, they pride themselves on saying these guys are independent contractors and the PGA Tour works for the players. The PGA Tour is by legal definition a 501c6 trade organization, and it works for the players, and it sets up business opportunities for the players in the form of tournaments and negotiates TV contracts, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
That players don't want to do. So you can't have this as your culture. Since 1933, when the PGA Tour first formed, and then 1968, when you had to break away from the PGA of America, engineered by Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus, you can't have this in your culture, and then not expect these guys to chase money. You know, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying that these guys aren't really, really greedy, but it's part of the culture is get what you can.
Yeah,
you know, And that's exactly what some of these guys did. Now, is it a threat to the PGA Tour? Yeah, I don't think maybe as much of a threat as they kind of think it is. I'm surprised they moved as quickly as they did with establishing these three new events, bumping the purses up. By the way, you think it's any accident that all the purse increases when totaled came up to $54
million. you can't make it up. Either that and not providing a cut in those new tournaments there.
And you know, your World Golf Championships don't have cuts, and so there's a little bit of a little bit of a precedent for this. I think the next move now is going to be twofold. Will the World Golf Rankings Board recognize LIV Golf for world ranking points? And you got to think about this. The board is composed of the heads of the governing bodies of all the golf. PGA Tour PGA of America, Augusta National, USGA, Royal and Ancient, the DP World Tour, which is the old European Tour. And there is a precedent for not recognizing alternative format events. They don't give World Golf ranking points to the team event in Zurich. They also don't give world ranking points to the Tour Championship ever since they went to that format where they have the starting strokes format.
Yeah.
Where the guy who's leading at the end of the first two playoff events is 10 under, the second guy is 8 under, the third guy is 6 under, but they don't give World Golf ranking points for that. So there is some precedent there. And then the other thing is, what will the Augusta National Golf Club do? Okay, the USGA and the RNA being the latest to do this, said, we have to let these guys play because we're an open competition, and the guys on the LIV Golf Tour who have already qualified, either World Golf Ranking, winning a certain number of events, being a past champion, things like that, we have to let them play. So now the next major after the Royal and Ancient, which runs the British Open, the next major is the Masters. And what will Augusta National do? Because they're a true invitational. And if you look at the Masters media guide or online and say qualifications to play the Masters, it's not qualifications, it's qualification for invitation.
Yeah.
So if you win, the door is always open for them not to invite you.
I'm glad you said that, Gary, because I get a couple times a week, I get, why doesn't Jay Monahan just suspend these golfers from the four majors? And I've always said, because it's not his decision, and you're giving us reasons why he can't do that and how, in fact, this is going to be decided. I've only got a couple of minutes left. So, you know, we could sit here and talk forever about blood money and politics and you know, frankly, some things that Phil Mickelson came out and said that, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't fully aware of what goes on politically in Saudi Arabia. But if you look at it just from a golf point of view, the most money ever won on the PGA Tour is Tiger Woods, $120.9 million. This year, Scottie Scheffler has already set the single season mark for the most amount of money ever made on the PGA Tour, over $13 million. How can you blame these guys if they're guaranteeing you $120 million or whatever it is that they're getting to go over there and play? And again, I'm not trying to look at this politically speaking. I'm talking about it as far as all about playing golf and the finances that you're able to make.
Yeah. Then you have to appeal to somebody's sense of history and legacy. Okay. Does it matter more to them to win a major or establish a certain legacy on that than money? If you went up to 100 PGA Tour players before all this happened, before anybody, the concept of LIV Golf ever happened, if you went up to 100 PGA Tour players and said, you can win all the Travelers Championships and all the AT&T Pebble Beaches and all the Byron Nelsons you want, okay, and the accompanying money, okay, but you can have a major and not get paid, what would you rather have?
Yeah.
They might have said the major.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the major. Give me the history. Okay? So now the issue is this is really a generational battle between providing for your family, and I've done that. Although, you know, I think Scottie Scheffler's family is being provided for very well by the $12 million he's already earned this year, okay, as opposed to the $125 million or so that Dustin Johnson has gotten up front money for playing LIV Golf for 3 years. Yeah, sure. But what do you want people 50 years from now to, when they look at your plaque at the Hall of Fame, what do you want them to think about you?
It's a great point. Yeah. And I have a feeling you and I will be continuing this as we move forward. Hey, leave us with this, back to Tallahassee, because with Arch Manning agreeing today with Texas, and who knows what the figures are going to be. If we were to go back in the time and we were in Tallahassee, now not based on what they did in their career like a Deion Sanders, but getting there, I came up with two names that I thought, if there were no rules in place, would generate the most amount of money. I came up with Marquette Smith, and I came up with Dan Kendra. Give me a couple. Give me a couple.
I'm sorry, you're not counting Dion?
No, I mean, you can, yeah, but I mean, Dion was expected to be great, and he was great.
Are you talking about guys that they were at the top of the recruiting class and didn't pan out?
I'm just talking about guys who were at the top of their recruiting class. I happen to pick two who did not pan out.
Okay. Kenny Felder.
Okay, yep, went baseball.
Freddie Kellen would have probably done very, very well. I'm not sure about Connell. Because, you know, he was a nice player when they signed him.
Right.
But, you know, Derrick Brooks.
Yeah. Brooks would have been a good one. No doubt.
Marvin Jones.
Yep.
You look at those guys. But you know what? For what they talk about the chaos and confusion that the NIL is selling. This is the NCAA's fault for not addressing this 20 years ago. For not giving the kids a little bit, for not letting a star quarterback 20 years ago go to a card show and make $250.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For not letting a kid do a commercial for a car dealership and making $500. You know, and the parallel that I, real quickly, the parallel I always draw for somebody is if you're in the FSU band, you can give music lessons to junior high school kids, or you can play in a band at Bullwinkle's, okay, and you can get paid, and they don't revoke your scholarship. That's just something you get. Or if you're a math major, you can be a tutor, and you can get paid for that. So what's the difference between that and a football player being able to go to a card show and play off of that talent?
Yeah, they missed out.
They did.
Hey, Gary, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Okay, we'll see you, Rick.
There he goes, Gary Smits. Covers golf for the Florida Times-Union, also covers the Jaguars. The Florida Times. You know, it's interesting. He mentioned a card show. One of the first interviews I ever did when I began in radio, which was like 3 days after Florida State won the national title against Nebraska. And he was like one of my first ever in studio guests. It was William Floyd. And he had a stack of cards that, you know, was like a rookie card. It was before the draft. So obviously he had his Florida State uniform on it, you know. I'd known William a little bit from covering him over there. And anyway, I can get you in studio. And he's like, yeah, what are you going to pay me? And I'm like, bro, I make $25 a week, okay? I'm still tending bar like three nights a week over at Doc's.
So
like,
half your salary.
Yeah. Not $25 a day. I'm making $25 a week. I mean, would you come in the Doc's and I'll get you some beers. Or if you don't drink, I'll get you some Cokes or whatever it is. But yeah, it's a great point there by Gary. You know what? Have some fun with that, though, as well on the text line tonight, 641-1010. And I'm not necessarily, like, for instance, I can imagine that there's going to be a ton of Tebow that's going to come in, and there's going to be a ton of Danny Warfel that is going to come in. But were they really the biggest? And I know Tebow was a huge recruit. I know he played right here at Nice, and it was basically Florida all along, maybe the outskirts of Alabama. But to me, Emmitt Smith was a much bigger recruit. Percy Harvin was a huge recruit. And, all right, those are guys who made it. But I'm sure there are others as well that you thought when they got there, I mean, this thing is just going to take out. Marquette Smith was enormous, Marquette Smith. I mean, they were basically building a statue for him, and he could never solve the starting lineup. I remember when he came back, I think he was with Central Florida and played against Florida State. I ended up running for over 100 yards one game, but just couldn't live up to it. And with all the great quarterbacks, man, I don't think anyone was ever bigger than Kendra, maybe Chris Winkie, maybe Joe Mauer, who never signed. But Kendra was supposed to be like the five-star can't-miss prospect. Well, he certainly missed. But if you want to do that, regardless of your school, feel free to blow it up there on the text line. That is 641-1010. Brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, NBA draft tonight. Big night in baseball, both last night and tonight. Clayton Kershaw
an economical 80 pitches in six innings, picks up his fifth win. Austin Hayes with the cycle last night with the Ospreys.
How about Ohtani?
Woo! I mean, 3-for-4 with two homers and eight ribbies on Tuesday, and then last night he spins a web. Eight innings, two hits, 13 strikeouts.
That's insane.
He's the reigning MVP. He's down a little bit in average, 260. But 15 home runs, 45 ribs. He's 6-4 on the bump with an ERA of 2.90. I mean, this is, and he was great last year. Obviously, I don't have a vote. Only the Baseball Writers Association of America members of that group have a vote. I would have voted Vladimir Guerrero last year.
Last year?
I thought he was just phenomenal. And, you know, I mean, Ruthanian, what Ohtani is doing, and you got to respect that. I just wonder how long it's going to be able to continue. And I think he can hit for another 15 years. I just wonder, you know, the pressure on that shoulder and that pressure on the elbow. And that's what you got to ask yourself, because if you feel that twinge in your elbow and you're a pitcher, they're going to shut you down for a month or 6 weeks. How does swinging a bat affect the twinge in that elbow? Can you risk him hurting himself throwing? So you sit him down for 6 weeks, you're going to miss, what, 35, 40 games if
minimum.
You sit him down.
Yeah.
Can you afford to miss all those at-bats because of what he's doing when it comes to throwing the baseball?
I mean, the toll it takes on your body. I mean, because he doesn't get a day off. I mean, he's pitching, and then he goes straight to hitting every other day. I mean, I just keep thinking he's in that Angels. It seems like he's buried in that L.A. market. If he were a Yankee or a Dodger, how much more publicity? I mean, it feels like you just hear, like, the highlights of him, like, and it's just like, that's it.
Yeah, the Angels don't get the love that you would think that they would deserve, even after they signed Pujols and, you know, they have Mike Trout. They just lost Rendon, which is a huge blow. You know, the Dodgers get all the pub. The Lakers get a phenomenal amount of pub. But when you slide on down the road to Anaheim, they're kind of buried, much like San Diego is kind of buried. And, yeah, I really enjoyed staying up last year watching that battle between those three California teams in the NL West. San Diego, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, you know, those 10:05, 10:35 starts Eastern was just phenomenal. You know, Tatis is out this year. The Dodgers have dealt with some injuries. Freeman's starting to heat up a little bit now. He had five ribbies the other day, finally hit a home run the other night. I think he only has like six this year.
Yeah, and he's about to go back to Atlanta.
Yeah. Hey, I think we have the winner. You know, I gave kind of a hypothetical to our last guest, Gary Smits, based on the Arch Manning. And maybe this is just the beginning of things to come, but I used to be a huge recruit, Nick, particularly in the years before, you know, the internet was around. Used to have those 800 numbers or 900 numbers, whatever the heck they were. And it was huge on sports radio back in the early to mid to even the late 90s. I've always loved recruiting. But Arch Manning on Twitter today was I'm going to go with bizarre. Bizarre thing I've ever seen for a kid who's got a year left in high school. I mean, every major entity had a story on him, not to mention all these folks that I follow and what have you, were saying something about Arch Manning. So, you know, he's got the name. Honestly, I don't know him from a hole in the wall, but I'll come right out and say it. I want to see him fail, okay? Peyton Manning never beat you guys. He never beat the Gators.
0-4.
Okay, so I don't... You know, he didn't do anything for me there. Eli Manning, through the most, you talk about dumb luck,
The ball that he threw that got caught in the side of the helmet of David Tyree, which ended up, by the way, ended up being the final grab of his career, then the one he did a few years later against Mario Manningham. Yeah, obviously I'm a Jags guy, but outside of that, I grew up as a New Englander, Bostonian, so the Pats are my second favorite team. And I know that those are just uncles to Arch, but I don't usually do that. Just at this age, you know, take a young kid, man, 17, 18, and say, I'm not going to root for him, but kind of the way I look at Arch Manning. But anyway, I asked Smits if the NIL was around, you know, last 20, 30 years or whatever, going to Florida State, who would be those names? And everyone's going to say Derek Brooks and Marvin Jones and Deion Sanders. But I picked two. I picked Marquette Smith and Dan Kendra. You may not even remember those names. They were huge and they fell apart. So I'm interested in what, you know, Florida fans would say, Miami fans would say, Georgia fans would say. I just got the best one here. 63-96. Willie Williams, the linebacker who went to Miami. That was absolutely enormous. And he totally flamed out. I mean, he did nothing, if memory serves me correct, in the NFL, in college football. 85-69, Brock Berlin, Sammy Smith. Yep, yeah. I mean, Sammy, no doubt. I think a lot of people will look back at Sammy and be like, well, you know, he fumbled the ball in Miami. He fumbled the ball in Denver. When he wanted to do something at Florida State, this guy was a big, fast back and very highly recruited. That is a great one. 6066 says Ballou. No, Sean Moreno from Georgia. I believe he was suspended for signing jerseys, I think. Wasn't that Green? Didn't that happen to the wide receiver Green? The one that Jalen got into the battle with? I can't even think of his name right now. He's been recently, the last couple of years, he's been playing his football in Arizona, right? Who am I thinking of? The Green kid, A.J. Green. A.J. Green missed a couple of games. Yeah, for signing his own jersey. You know, he got paid for it, but yeah, that'd be a huge one. No doubt about that. Can you imagine what it would have been like with Herschel Walker? Xavier Lee. Okay, that is from the 60-17, no doubt. That was really a major turning point of those two programs. You know, the downfall of Bowden and the hiring of Urban Meyer after Ron Zook, the two that will always stick out to me, if you go back and look at recruiting rankings, Florida got a quarterback in Tim Tebow. Florida State got a quarterback in Xavier Lee. I think they were one class apart. But they were both so highly decorated. And around the same time, Florida got the wide receiver, right? It wasn't Percy Harvin with me, Virginia Beach?
Yes, Virginia Beach.
Yep, somewhere in that. And Florida State got the local kid, Fred Rouse. I mean, every bit as highly ranked as Percy Harvin. But that was the difference, man. And that's why Florida won, you know, two national titles with those players. And, you know, Florida State for a period of you know, several years. You look back at those records now, and there's not a Seminole fan alive who wouldn't take it. I mean, we were complaining about Florida State going 9-4. And, you know, I think they had a couple of 7-5s in there. No fans right now driving around the road with razor and say, you know what? Give me a 9-3 right now. Where do I sign? There's some right now that would say, give me a 7-5 right now with this schedule. Where do I sign? All right, we'll keep with that coming up in our second hour. We'll grab a couple of calls on it as well. We got much to do. We're with you tonight till 8 o'clock. It's good to have you with us. My name is Rick Ballou. This is the home of the Jags.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, I hope you're buying your tickets for tomorrow night. Los Lobos, Tedeschi Trucks. Had a nice interview with them on Monday. Might even be going to a little shindig tonight. But tomorrow night, tickets are available. And you better come out and support one of Duval's greats, Derek Trucks. Three bands tomorrow night. I'm guessing Trucks, Tedeschi, or Tedeschi Trucks will probably go on, I don't know, I'm guessing somewhere around 9:30 or so. That'd be just a guess. So it's not going to be like last Friday when I went from here to the Florida Theater in 4.5 minutes to see Robbie Krieger. I'll be able to take my time and drive safe this time to Daly's Place. Not to say I'm not interested in either one of the other two bands. I am. But I'll be a little bit slower as far as getting there.
Yeah, you didn't drive last week. I was going to say, if you drove your truck, you would have been, as high as that thing sits, you would have been turning on two wheels.
The GF was waiting in the parking lot. She doesn't drink. She got me there. So, always appreciate that. I remember saying 100 days to the NFL draft. And I've said it many times over the years because, well, the Jaguars suck. And you start talking about the draft, you know, months and months and months and months in advance. Tonight is the NBA draft. And it's just amazing to me. I'm not going to spend any more time ripping basketball. I already gave you my opinion on it. The product is not what it once was. The game is not what it once was. It's all about hoisting three balls. But tonight, Orlando on the clock. Auburn's Jamari Smith Jr. appears to be the guy that most believe will end up going number one. But, hey, settle in. Have your draft parties. You know, make your dips. Do all that good stuff. Whenever I talk baseball, I hear from quite a few people. Whenever I mention hockey, I'm actually surprised at how many people I hear from. We did golf 30 minutes ago with Gary Smith, heard from some people. I just don't get it from NBA fans. Do you? Other shows you produce? Others? I mean, I know Hacker's a big Magic fan.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's our text line or social media, is that... is it ahead of the NHL? I think, well, I'm not trying to say anything about anyone. I don't think anyone talks NHL like I do on this station.
No.
And I'm actually very brief with it because I understand that, you know, if I sit here and start talking NHL and NHL, yes, some people are going to love it, but others are going to go click and put something else. Football's coming up in 10 seconds, folks. But the NBA, man, the draft's tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, this is becoming almost obscure as like the NHL draft or, you know, dare I say, the Major League Baseball draft.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to the NFL draft like you were talking about, the one thing that college football has that college basketball doesn't is obviously we know all the players. Not only do we know all the players, but we know their story. We all know high school, where they went, where they transferred. College basketball, can you tell me five things about Jabari Smith?
No.
Okay, he's going to be number one.
Mm-mm.
I forget his name, the Gonzaga dude, tall, white, skinny dude.
Chet Holmgren.
He's supposed to be the second pick.
But
I can't tell you anything other than he played well in the tournament last 3 weeks.
Well, you know, when I started in Tallahassee, man, and Tim Duncan played all 4 years at Wake Forest, I sure as heck knew about him. I knew about Rasheed Wallace and Jerry Stackhouse, who played either 2 or 3 years respectively. And then as soon as they left, same recruiting class, because I remember Pat Kennedy telling me he thought he had a really good chance to get Vince Carter out of Daytona Beach, Mainland. He comes in with Antoine Jameson. You have Joe Smith coming in. Maryland was ranked number one at one point. He was the top pick of his entire career at Maryland.
Yep.
You knew those guys. Duke had Leitner, Thomas Hill, Grant Hill, Bobby Hurl. I mean, you knew him year after year after year. And yeah, I'm not blaming the kids for taking the money. I'm not blaming the kids for we talk so much about the transfer portal in football because around here, football's king. There's actually more transferring in college basketball than there is in college football.
Oh, 100%. Because, I mean, You mean you think there's so little positions to play? I mean, only five guys on the court. Uh-huh. And I mean, what, college basketball, if you're a really good team, you're going, what, eight, at most nine deep?
Once you get to March.
Yeah. And
or if you're the Boston Celtics.
Yeah. Like, who was it? There was
dude,
some
the
guy.
The Boston Celtics are getting like 2 points a game off the bench in the NBA Finals.
Yeah. And this is another thing. The draft, whoever's drafted tonight, they won't have an impact on a winning team probably for, I'd say, at minimum 3 years.
Yeah, plus these guys will give up a first-round pick if you also take, like, a bad contract.
Yep.
A guy who no longer gets minutes for you, but you're somehow paying him $17, $18, $19 million. Wait, you'll take that contract with the pick? They'll trade a higher pick, take a lower pick, just to get that money, you know, from out within the salary cap. And that salary cap is complex as well, man. It just – trying to figure that one out compared to the NFL's. And you know, I thought I used to have a pretty good understanding with the NFL salary cap until the Los Angeles Rams have done what they have done this offseason.
Yeah, there is no salary cap. That's unlimited over there. The way they, I guess when you get a new stadium and you get all these fans and you pack the house and, but I don't know.
Let's get to Chuck, who is next up. He goes into the night. Welcome.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Love the show, Rick. I just want your opinion on a couple of three things. Is number one, the Avalanche, they skate. Like, it's almost like it's like the Eskimos versus or the Oilers versus the Islanders back in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. They're just out skating them. Yep. Just out skating them. And Bobby Sablehouse would be...
Ooh.
You know, one of the NIL guys.
Yeah. Isn't he like a Hollywood, like, director now or something? I believe he is. I honestly, the last I knew anything about Bobby Sablehouse, I don't want to say something I should. No, I'm actually going to save the other part until I look it up because that would be mean.
Okay. All right.
But last I knew, he was in Hollywood.
Okay. And then lastly is, you know, the PGA cannot outspend the Saudis. These guys are making enough money in like 2 hours from oil prices than the PGA makes in a year. It's not even close.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wish I had a little bit more time with Gary. Hey, appreciate it. Some good stuff there, Chuck. But you got to wonder, if Saudi Arabia really wants to grow the game, okay? Everyone makes mistakes when you start. Doesn't matter what it is. You start your own business. When we started this radio station, when you start a football, you got to learn through your mistakes. Well, what if in Saudi Arabia, what if Greg Norman is smart enough that he says, guys, we need our own Korn Ferry Tour. We don't have to pay him anything like what the guys are making on the LIV Tour. But if you really want to grow the game, then start poaching guys that are trying to get qualified, trying to get their card. Dive into the colleges. Dive into the high schools. Obviously make it worth more than you can currently make on Korn Ferry's tour. But, you know, look at the Korn Ferry tour. I mean, it was just the web.com tour here a couple of years ago. They were playing out at Atlantic Beach. Did several shows out there, I think, for 2 or 3 years. Should have seen the women out there, Dylan. You talk about husband hunting. Oh, my gosh, it was awesome. Just to watch them, all dressed to the nines.
Sundresses.
Oh, sundress. I mean, if you're north of, I'm going to say 26, their eyeballs didn't come anywhere near you. Okay? I mean, dude, I shaved. I fixed my hairs. I did everything. And they
your best fit.
Just looked right through me. No, they were going right after what they thought were future members of the PGA Tour. And it was great. They got a nice little clubhouse over there at Atlantic Beach. But now to the Korn Ferry Tour. Isn't that the best way? Listen, I don't want it to sound like I'm promoting golf in Saudi Arabia. I'm just saying, I mean, a lot of people are panicking now. It's almost like they told us what they were going to do. The backbone was flexed here, like,
It's not going to happen. And now all of a sudden, you know, you want to send Guyou Stazen over there, Charles Schwartzel over there, Sergio Garcia, Phil Mickelson over there. All right, that's one thing. That's mid-40-somethings. Phil just turned, what, 52 last week? You can get away with that and make comments. But when all of a sudden DJ says, I'm going, and Brooks Koepka says he's going, and Patrick Reed says that he is going, and who else am I thinking of here? The mad scientist. I almost said Brandel Chambly.
Kevin Na's one of them.
Kevin Na's kind of in between on that. How come I can't think of Bryson DeChambeau?
Yeah.
You know, and then you got the whole thing with Abraham Answer. I don't know if that's final or not. I mean, I saw it online. I read it that came from the LIV in their Twitter feed that he was going. But all of a sudden, if guys like that start going, you got to take notice. And, you know, the one comfort that the PGA Tour should be able to take out of this is, you remember what it was like around here with the USFL. You remember the money that was thrown at Herschel Walker and these players, and it just fell apart, even though apparently we just went through a USFL season. I honestly don't even know. I remember congratulating Reggie Barlow when he was announced as one of the coaches. Barlow, one of my all-time favorite Jaguars. The WHL tried to battle the NHL, and they did for a number of years, man. They went out and they got Gordie Howe. They got Bobby Hull in his prime. They got Jerry Cheevers. I mean, the Philadelphia team gave that record-setting amount of money to Derek Sanderson. Remember the ABA? What are the ABAs? You know, we're going to develop an ABA. We're going to put in a three-point line. We're going to have a colorful basketball. Dr. J, come on board. George McGinnis, come on board. The A-Train, Artis Gilmore, come on board. Who was the guy, Haywood, the first guy who really, like, challenged? He was, like, the initial, he was like the Curt Flood who really created, Spencer Haywood, really created free agency in Major League Baseball. For those of you youngsters who like the game and have no idea what I'm talking about, go back and read about Curt Flood. Same thing with Spencer Haywood. Yeah, I think he played his college basketball at the University of Detroit. And he just took, but all these leagues folded. They all ran out of money. Okay. It doesn't appear that this tour is going to run out of money. It's like they're just printing money. And yeah, you can, it's blood money. It's awful money. But to a lot of people, it's still money. And I can't imagine what it's like trying to make a tour. Because golf is so competitive right now. Greg Norman would be smart. And that's the biggest scare of all. Okay, you may lose another Abraham Answer. You may lose another high-quality. I mean, there was talk about Morikawa. There was talk about, you know what, so many have been rumored, and then they had to come out. And JT even had to deny it this week. He pulled himself out of the Travelers in Connecticut. Said he tweaked his back. People automatically started speculating that he was going to the LIV Tour. So you got to have all that. But if you really want to make the game grow, you should start a tour like the Corn Ferry.
You think they find a TV deal? The LIV Tour?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. Now we're really getting into politics. And, yeah. And things that I don't know enough about. I can't see Disney doing it. I just don't know. I mean, what's it now? It's streaming and it's now. I wouldn't be surprised if one of these new streaming devices. And I don't know enough about the history of Amazon and Hulu and Prime and what is it, Peacock. Now Peacock comes straight from NBC, I believe. But I don't know enough about. I'm not educated in that area, but. If you laid $10,000 on the table and said in a cup, do you think there'll be? I would absolutely say yes.
Yeah. Amazon. So Amazon is getting into sports. They got, you know, the Thursday night rights, Thursday night football for the NFL. Netflix is about to dip their toe in sports. They're apparently trying to get or in negotiations with Formula One. So if it were, you know, if it's about money and streaming, getting the most money, you know, to get most eyeballs on these golfers for the LIV Tour, those were probably those would most definitely be your top two. For TV, probably Fox.
Yeah,
when you think if it were local,
I just don't know enough about the politics. I don't, and every defender of the LIV Tour will come right out and say, well, the NBA is in bed with China. Okay, and again, I try to do this without making it political. I honestly do not know enough about it. I'm sorry. I try to follow the politics right here in Duval. I try to find the politics right here in our state and in our country. I'm just not up to speed on everything that is happening there or several other places. But I got to believe that for every Brooks Koepka who's leaving, that can only help that. It's not going to hurt it. The other point you mentioned about the Avalanche, man, you're dead right. All four of those lines can skate. And, you know, when Colorado was battling Detroit and at that particular time when that was the best rivalry in the National Hockey League, it was a short-lived rivalry. You still had one line where guys could throw. And, you know, you had Probert. You had, who am I thinking of, the big defenseman with his son now plays in the NHL. It's escaping me. Right now, but you had guys who could fight, and you know you got a couple of guys, and this has actually been a pretty interesting series where we have seen a couple of battles, which is nice. But the point I'm trying to make is all 12 forwards on both teams, you know, all four lines, all three of your front guys, they can absolutely fly, and you don't have goons anymore. You don't have henchmen. You don't have guys that are out there protecting your stars. You can't afford to have that in your lineup. You've got to have, 12 guys who can skate, six defensemen who can do their part. It's been a very entertaining series. And a lot of people be upset last night. Tampa Bay was with too many men on the ice. We talked about that at the start of the show. Unfortunately, it's a call that you cannot review, and it's a very subjective call. I compare it to traveling in the NBA. It happens all the time. It gets called. As a matter of fact, I think it gets called more on ice than traveling actually gets called on the floor in the NBA. It did not get called last night against Tampa. All right, we got much more to do. With you tonight up until 8 o'clock, Hacker will join you then.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All 32 training camps announced today, officially here in town. Jacksonville will report on the 24th of July. I believe practice number one will be a day later on the 25th. That is veterans and rookies, the team they'll face off against in Canton, Ohio. On August 4th, the Raiders rookies will report on July 19th. Veterans, July 20th. Got some football I want to get to here in just 1 minute. 4376 says, Ballew, I'm disappointed that as an on-air personality, you don't know or understand the political situation in Saudi Arabia. You want me to lie? Yeah, many times I've brought up the basics, the things that we know, the beheading of the journalist, what they have done to those in same-sex marriages. And every time I get into that talk about it, I get quite a few people say, Bully, you're a hater. You're an LIV tour hater. I have not spent enough time on this, and I'm not going to lie to you about it, okay? That I know what's going on, politically speaking, in Saudi Arabia. I just don't. You know, for 30 years, I've been doing sports. Every time we bring up situations like this, I get, doesn't matter where I am, what show I'm doing, I'm getting, stick to sports. I try, when I'm away from sports, to figure out what's going on locally.
or in our country. So anyway, I'm sorry you're disappointed, but I'm going to read your comments anyway. Wouldn't you rather have me come out and tell you that I'm not aware of everything that's going on there than try to fake it? One of the worst things I ever had to do in Chicago was during those 9/11 attacks. Our program director calls us, and all of a sudden he makes us news journalists. I don't know how to cover. I didn't know how to cover Osama bin Laden and all. I'm not advanced in that. I don't read that type of material day in, day out. So whatever, man. I mean, I don't study world politics. Just don't. Can't please everyone. Really disappointed today in, you know, Roger Goodell. He's facing a lot of criticism now because obviously they've asked him to testify and everything that's going on with Daniel Snyder and just that entire cover up of years and years and years of sexual harassment and everything that came out of that. It's a terrible story. I believe that, again, you talk about politics in Saudi Arabia. I mentioned Daniel Snyder in this court setting. There are many, my guess is there are thousands and thousands like, yeah, you know, I know a little bit about it, but who cares? You know, who cares? Let's get to the real stuff. What's going on with Deshaun Watson? Everyone seems to care about that for so many, for really a variety of different reasons. But learning again today, and this came from Mark Maskey, again, he's a very credible reporter in Washington, D.C. Roger Goodell is not the person who is going to decide the punishment for Deshaun Watson. And it was, who's the girl on ESPN? Is it Josina Anderson?
Yes.
She came out today and said, she reported that talks have been going on between the NFL Players Association, and the lawyers who represent Deshaun Watson on what the penalty should be as far as games that he will be suspended for. Are you kidding me? First off, the NFL and NFLPA can barely agree on anything, okay? The NFLPA is going to fight this. My guess is that the NFLPA is going to say he missed a game a year ago. Go look at the owner in New England and Bob Kraft. You know, would you give him 100 hours of community service? Deshaun's paying the women. He's already paid, what, 20 of the 24? I think the NFLPA is going to fight for Deshaun. The NFL, the owners are going to say, you kidding me? You gave this guy $230 million guaranteed. It's the most money in the history of the game. He's embarrassed our game. So they're not going to go. And then you've got the lawyers involved for what? I mean, you talk about a complete circus, man. This is the NFL. Doesn't matter what battle the NFL is in. They always get out unscathed. They get out without a scratch. And I'm not, as I said at the beginning of the show, and I didn't touch on it, but I said it then, I don't hate Roger Goodell. I'm not a hater. I'm honestly wondering, what does he do?
By the way, he makes $64 million last year and next year.
Gary Smith said it last hour. It's the NCAA's fault. They should allow these collegiate athletes 20, 30 years ago to make a small stipend. They didn't. They fought it. The NCAA was the governing body, and you had the deal with commissioners from every conference and presidents with every school. You had way too many people that you had to go through in order to make a decision. And it was always said, well, if college football had a commissioner, these problems would have been solved. The NFL does have a commissioner who makes an incredible amount of money, but he's never in the forefront. I mean, he just gives you one of those canned answers. And I'm one of those who believes when you're making that amount of money and your name is on this league, you are the number one man running this league, and you don't have a say on Deshaun Watson? I mean, right or wrong, whether you believe that last year's season should be, you know, basically already considered penalty or time, you know, spent. If you believe that way, fine. I mean, we can sit here and argue that all night. Well, he got paid, right? He didn't play, you know, but he sat out. Should that count as a... But you may think it's going to be six games this year. You know, I remember baseball when Charlie Finley had a fire sale after the Oakland A's won the World Series in 1972, 73, and 74. They lost to the Red Sox in the American League Championship Series in 75. This is the day where you had four divisions and two pennant winners. All right, you didn't have all the divisions like you have today, the six divisions. You didn't have the wild card team. You realize there's 14, is it 12 or 14? I think there's 12. No, I think this is year one of 14 teams, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
I have to look that up again in Major League Baseball. They just changed it. It might be 12. I don't know. By the time October gets here, I'll let you know. Charlie Finley sold everyone, man. I remember he moved Vita Blue and Joe Rudy to Boston. Jim Catfish Hunter was on his way to New York, and he ended up there. He was moving Reggie Jackson. He was moving Gene Tennis. He was moving Sal Bando. He was moving them all. He was moving Raleigh Fingers. He had an absolute fire sale. And Bowie Kuhn stepped up, and it was either Bowie. Yeah, it was Bowie Kuhn at that time. Said, no way. That's not happening.
12 teams make it.
12 teams. Thank you. The NFL allowed the Cleveland Browns to sign Deshaun Watson to $230 million guaranteed, the most money in the history of the game, and write a contract that this year is going to pay him just over $1 million. Out of $230 million guaranteed, let's say he misses six games. He's only going to lose $55,000 a game. He's going to lose just over $300,000 out of the $230 million guaranteed that he is going to get. Where is Roger Goodell here? I mean, seriously. So, I got to take a break. I've overshot the runway. We are going to go to Vegas. A lot of talk about Jake Paul. I mean, the Jake Paul stuff's ridiculous as far as people going to the window. Much more than anything else boxing related, and he's going to take on Tommy Fury. Much more than what we see during these big UFC fights. I mean, to me, they used to be looked at as kind of like celebrity boxing matches. But, you know, the Paul brothers, it's just off the chart. So let's do that. We'll go to Vegas next. If you want to comment on that, though, with Roger Goodell, I'm just very disappointed that a guy of that power doesn't have say in issues like this when it comes to Deshaun Watson.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Now. Another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Las Vegas is where we head. Rafael Esparza, our guest, each and every Thursday night from MyBookie, MyBookie.com. What do you say, Rafael?
Not much. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing outstanding. Before we get to the big stuff that is coming up in the very near future, how did things end up for you guys over the 4 days of the United States Open?
It was good. I mean, I think it doesn't matter if it was gambling or watching. I'm sure all the controversy of Liv and all that talk pretty much overshadowed everything. But it was good for us. It was great to see two young guys going back to back from 13, 14, 15, 16th hole. So it was good. But It was a nice cash run. No, it wasn't a big name that won it, so we would have probably lost money on McIlroy if he would have probably came back. He got a lot of tickets after Thursday's play.
Right. What was Fitzpatrick in, like, the teens or 20s as far as rankings going? Or was he just part of the field?
No, I think he was in the 20s. I think we opened him up, 25-1. I'm not 100%, but I think he was around there.
All right. We talk forever about the NFL draft. We're about 12 minutes away from the NBA draft. How are things there? How active? Because I know it's hard to understand these players because they're one and done and, you know, transfer portal. It's not like the old days where guys spend 2, 3, 4 seasons at one college or university. So how's the gambling for this?
Not as big. I mean, it's not even close to what the NFL comes. And you said, I think, with the transfer portal and not that many rounds, and people just don't watch college basketball like they do in the college football and then the NFL. So, I mean, we get some good action. It was great action for the last, 48 hours. Who's going to be number one? Either Smith, Holmgren, or Pinchero. I mean, it was going back and forth. So I'm going to be very curious. I'm hearing Smith, but I mean, Pinchero was the favorite this morning and late last night. So it's going to be very interesting after the third. I think the first, second, and third pick, the order of who goes. Those three are going, but where are they going?
Big fight coming up, announced now that, first off, they were supposed to do it in December, but Tommy Fury had to remove himself because of an injury. Jake Paul, 5-0 against Fury, August 6th, and they'll do it in New York at Madison Square Garden. Sounds pretty good to me.
It is. I mean, he's fighting a younger fighter. He's not fighting a wash-up. So, and it's very interesting. People are like, oh, why is he fighting Tommy Fury and all that? This is a big, probably, match for him because he could probably get big deals if he wins this one. I mean, big name deals. He can maybe fight Conor. He can maybe fight Mike Tyson. He can maybe fight Nate Diaz. And all those are bigger names than Tommy Fury. So if he beats Tommy Fury, a younger guy, an actual boxer, then I think his payday with a big, 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 big name is going to be his next fight.
All right, so this is, you know, I'm asking you, I got to believe this is without any doubt his toughest fight to date, considering his first five. What are the odds going to be here, and what do you believe is going to happen? We've got, a week and a half in June and July, 1 week of August, until these two get after one another.
I put up -125 for Paul. He's a longer fighter, a bigger reach. This will be his tougher one fight just because, again, he's fighting a boxer. He's not fighting a former MMA guy or an older guy. So this will be his tough one. And that's why I think if he wins this one, I don't want to say he deserves a bigger payday, but he will get a big payday for his next fight, which I heard he lost a lot of money from crypto. So he needs probably the money that he probably lost. I think he lost more than your quarterback over there in Jacksonville when it comes to crypto, but this is a big fight for him. I can't wait to see this. I think he's going to end up the favorite as well, because the betting public loves the bet Paul.
The word here is that Trevor Lawrence lost $25,000, that the report by Barstool was wrong. It wasn't his signing bonus. It was something called Blockfolio, where they gave him a $25,000 signing bonus, and that went into his cryptocurrency, but hey, you know, when you're Barstool, as long as you make people laugh, you don't have to report the facts there, Raphael.
That is true, and if that is the case, I did not know that, then Paul lost a lot more money than your quarterback ever did. So I will retract my facts and say thank you for telling me the truth.
Colorado was a favorite over Tampa Bay going into the Stanley Cup, but there's a lot of different ways that you can do this. What about playing Colorado to win it in five, because that's what's at stake tomorrow night?
Yeah, you would have got good money on that. I think we opened up around +350. I saw 4-1 at Colorado in five. Most people bet Colorado in six or Colorado in seven. We need Tampa Bay to come back and win this one, because Colorado was the betting favorite all season long, especially in the playoffs. So we'll be rooting for maybe a game six and game seven, just where he gets some of that future money back. But I think Colorado closes it out on Friday night. I think the NBA and NHL will be under summer vacations. I think Colorado wins. -170 is a very, very low number for how they play at home and the way Tampa plays on the road.
Right. No doubt. All right. We talked golf earlier. Let's wrap with this. again, it wasn't on TV. I guess you can pirate it or get it on some streaming services, and they only play 54 holes. Did you do anything a couple of weeks ago with the LIV Tour? Will you do anything next week with the second event? This time will be in the United States. It'll be out in Portland.
Unfortunately, the bosses want more stuff that I put out for the first tournament. So I'm going to treat it just like a PGA event. I'll do head-to-head matchups. I saw that. So we'll have a whole bunch of stuff out there for the LIV tournament. And I'm going to just now treat it like another, like how I treat the CFL and college football instead of when the NFL is playing. So we'll be doing the same amount of stuff of golf on LIV, and we will do it in the same thing in PGA.
There you have it, Rafael Esparza. Hey, tell us about MyBookie, MyBookie.com.
Yeah, we have a busy weekend. We got UFC this weekend, got NHL on Friday, baseball all on the weekend, UFC on the weekend, so don't get to jump over to MyBookie. Jump on now, win now, and have a great, great weekend, everybody in the state of Florida.
You ever done where a college kid's going to go? Because I would have figured if it ever was going to happen, Arch Manning would have been the guy to do it with.
We did, and I had Texas as a favorite because I heard all along that he had really, really good talks family-wise with Texas and stuff like that and the coaches. So we had him as a small favorite early on. I didn't want to put it back on there because I knew Texas was probably going to be a really, really high up there. So it didn't really shock me that he's going to Texas.
I've never seen that before. Have you done him with a few other young athletes?
No, he was the first one I did in football. I think I did some stuff in college basketball a couple of years ago. I can't remember. I have to go back and check. But he would be the only one probably. I can't see another athlete out there. Maybe LeBron's kid when he gets old enough.
All right. Hey, always a lot of fun, Rafael. Enjoy all the games. Best of luck to you, and we'll pick it up again next Thursday.
Take it easy. Have a great weekend.
There he goes on the Farrah and Farrah phone line. Rafael Esparza, live from Las Vegas. A lot of good things happening out there. I have yet to get caught up in the Jake Paul thing. And I think I'm one of those guys that if he is going to fight, I want him to lose. You know, that's kind of the way that I look at it. But we'll see. We got time to talk about that. That won't get off until August 6th at the Madison Square Garden. That's going to do it for us. Again, Rafael Esparza, thank you. Thank you to Gary Smits for joining us. Hacker coming up right now. I do not check the text line now that the show is over. If you want to get a hold of me, please do so on Twitter. That is Baloo1010XL. For Dylan McDermott, my name is Rick Baloo. We'll talk tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Make sure you buy those tickets for tomorrow night. Tedeschi and Trucks, their band, in town at Daly's Place.